thought, well, I wonder if, I hope John Tierney hasn't changed his mind about any of this because I've been quoting him. He's on the phone now. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, fine, thanks. And I can assure you that I haven't changed my mind.
Have I been characterizing your views correctly generally?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that 35-mile square you talk about, I mean, no one's talking about putting that in one place. And it's, you know, we just have an enormous amount of open land now that's being used for grazing. And it would fit, I think it's on one, is it 0.1%?
Yes.
Of that land. And basically, you know, that land isn't lost. You just cover it up and then it turns into a park or a golf course, you know. So that's what's happening to, you know, landfills around the country.
That sounds so reckless. That sounds so like bury the problem and it'll go away. That's what it sounds like you're saying, John.
Well, you know, the stuff all came out of the ground. I mean, we're just putting it back in, you know. These metals and, you know, the plastic comes from petroleum. I mean, if anything, it's, you know, if you're worried about environmental damage, a piece of plastic, it does, you know, has less impact than the petroleum that was there. So, it's not, you know, there's rocks, there's lots of things underground. You know, the trees, of course, just, you know, trees grow and they just are, you know, basically decomposed naturally anyway. So,
well, so how did you celebrate Earth Day then? Did you litter or something? What did you?
You know, one problem with recycling is that when cities start spending a lot of money on that, they often cut back. In fact, it happened in New York City when they started recycling. The program was so expensive they cut back on street cleaning. You know, and the problem with recycling is it's very expensive for cities to do, and it takes money. You know, that could be used for other environmental purposes, for buying parks, for building schools, and you know, something that makes people feel good. But we're paying the, you know, we're not saving money doing it, we're spending money to do it, and I don't think we're doing much good to the planet. And we're also, you know, and the most valuable thing the reason I called it perhaps the most wasteful activity in America is the biggest waste in recycling isn't the money that cities spend, although that's a lot. I mean, New York City's probably spent $2 billion extra on because of its recycling program, you know, since 1990. But the biggest is all the time we spend. We're spending all this time sorting garbage. And people in very poor countries, you know, the poorest people on earth go through garbage dumps looking for stuff. But, you know, we're lucky that most people in the world, you know, have escaped from that and don't have to sort through garbage anymore to get stuff. And I don't see why we're going back to that.
Last time you were on, my producer and my newsman, I said, huh? How about that? How about that? And you know what they said? Not so much. They go, yeah, where I go. And I said to them, well, who the hell are you to argue with John Tierney? I mean, he wrote in the New York Times. And they said, well, who is he? And I said, well, I think he's a guy that writes about the environment and studies it more than you and I do. Who are you?
You can't speak for me now, John.
And one of them is, his initials are Steve Bertrand, and he's standing right here.
All I said was, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
And I said, I think he does, or knows more than we do. But what are your credentials? Like, I'll bet I could find somebody that disagrees with your cavalier attitude about recycling, John.
Well, you certainly could. I mean, when I wrote that original article, you know, the Environmental Defense Fund and I think the Natural Resources Defense Council put out whole, you know, pamphlets, kind of, you know, small books denouncing it. But they really couldn't argue with the basic facts I was presenting. And, you know, they kept saying, you know, when I wrote the original one in the 1990s, people said, you know, it's still new. Yeah, maybe it loses money now, but once we get good at it, it's going to make sense. And the reverse has happened. You know, I mean, there have been several big articles this year in The Atlantic and The Times and other places how these cities are just can't afford to do recycling anymore. It's just getting less and less economical to do it because, you know, I mean, recycling was based on the idea that we're running out of all these materials and that we're running out of landfill space. And those are both false assumptions. You know, we're not running out of this stuff. And, you know, people thought oil would cost, you know, $500 a barrel by now, so we'd be, you know, desperate to recycle plastic bottles so we could, you know, conserve, you know, reuse the petroleum that went into it. But, you know, there's no shortage of oil. And so, you know, there just isn't any economic demand. You know, there are a few things that make sense to recycle, like aluminum and, you know, commercial cardboard. If it's pretty easy to collect, you can recycle that. But most stuff, it just doesn't make, you know, much sense.
I was going to say, though, that the carbon produced in the creation of these items where recycling is a problem. But I guess recycling these items, does that necessarily reduce then the carbon footprint that will generate from the use of these kinds of things?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that's become, because the original justification, you know, that we're running out of this stuff and we have no place to bury it, that has, I mean, even devout environmentalists, you know, pretty much agree that, yeah, those were false alarms. So the new justification for it is that it's reducing carbon in the atmosphere. But it's doing it, to the extent it's doing it, it's a minuscule amount. And I mean, I question whether it's doing it at all, because I mean, it's true that if you recycle something, you do save some carbon emissions, because, you know, they're not manufacturing new stuff. But we're spending carbon. You know, there are trucks that go. You know, the trucks are making extra trips. To do the recyclable.
Right.
And so it's very hard to factor it all in. The people, you know, and the EPA. What I used in my article, I used the EPA's estimates about carbon emissions, and I'm skeptical of them, because EPA is one of the biggest promoters of recycling. So, and when you make these estimates, they're so imprecise, and, you know, depending on what assumptions you do. But even if you use the EPA's estimates, you know, I found that it takes to offset the greenhouse impact of one passenger's round trip flight between New York and London, you would have to recycle roughly 40,000 plastic bottles. So it's not, and that assumes that you don't rinse them out. You know, cities like New York tell you to rinse it out, and by one calculation, if you rinse that in warm water that was produced by coal power, you're actually adding. You know, the net effect of recycling is to add carbon to the atmosphere.
Okay, stop right there. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to say, so John had a guest on last week, a recycling expert, and she kept talking about all the things that we couldn't recycle, and. So it sort of begged the question, how important is it if there's no one seems to be in a rush to expand recycling?
There's no financial
incentive.
Right,
there's no money in it.
I think that's apples and oranges. That is, okay, there's no financial incentive in it, but it still doesn't mean that it's not better for the planet if we recycle.
But I think if it was so as vital as a lot of us think, there'd be a lot more effort to expand what can be recycled rather than say, we're just throwing that out.
Well, I'm worried that he just said that if you fly to Europe, that's 40,000 bottles you got to recycle. I'm going to London Friday. And,
okay.
And then I'm coming back, so I've got to come up with 80,000 bottles.
No, it's actually 40,000 for the round trip, so you're off easy.
Yeah, but
I only have to find 40,000.
But I'm going to Paris in July, so
okay.
I'll rack up another 40,000. So I'm 80,000 out. So then are you some sort of climate denier? Are you some sort of science skeptic about the health of the planet?
Well, I'm not a climate denier in the sense, of course, the greenhouse effect is real, and I do think climate change is a threat. I mean, that's a long talk. I don't think it's an existential threat to civilization. I think there are more important problems to worry about now, but I think it's something we should be, you know, doing research on.
Wait a minute. What's more important than worrying about climate change?
Well, there are a billion people in the world there are nearly a billion people that don't have electricity. You know, there are 250,000, you know, kids a year dying from, you know, going blind and dying from nutritional, you know, deficiencies.
I know that, but I don't think it's a zero-sum game. In your very newspaper, the book review section has a review of a book today, and the premise is it was Sunday, and it was, has the human species played out? Are we just going to drive ourselves to extinction with our wayward ways? So, of course, we need to feed the hungry children of the world. But for crying out loud, the planet's not going to be livable at the rate we're going, John.
See, this is where you and I have to part company. I mean, I've been listening to these apocalypse since the first Earth Day. You know, the first Earth Day in 1970, people were predicting that we'd be out of oil by 2000, that there'd be mass famines in the 80s, that there'd be, you know, pollution would be so awful, we'd be choking. And in fact, environment has gotten, you know, especially in rich countries, and, you know, the richer countries get, the cleaner the air and the water get. You're actually much more efficient at instead of doing you know, very inefficient coal plants and inefficient cars. You know, the cars we have and the, you know, the natural gas and nuclear plants emit less carbon.
Do you want me to draw one of those carbon graphs for you to show how the temperature is increasing with the carbon in the atmosphere, which is increasing, and that we're this close to 1.5 or 2 degrees and what the consequences will be? I mean, I'm believing that stuff, John.
Well, I'm saying that the people who are making the worst, I mean, I agree the temperature has gone up some. You know, I'm a lukewarmist. It hasn't gone up nearly as dramatically as the computer models predicted. And, you know, and I mean, funny thing is, you know, one thing about those carbon graphs, you take a look sometime at the temperature graph, the global temperature graph for the first part of the 20th century and the second part. And they're actually not that different, you know. I mean, it was rising in the first part of the, and there wasn't much carbon in the atmosphere then. You know, the carbon stuff all kicked in later. Hmm. So I think, it's hard to predict how much it's going to go up. I mean, the computer models have been too high so far, and, you know, things no one really knows. And I think the fact that we don't know doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything about it. We should certainly be studying the problem and looking for better ways to produce electricity with less carbon. But it's not. I mean, we are so rich in advance. I mean, even if the ocean goes up a few feet, I mean, you know, I mean, we know how to deal with that. People in Holland have been doing it for 1,000 years. It's not an existential threat.
We know how to deal with it. It's such a funny thing. Yeah, we know how to deal with it. Miami will have to not be there, and Waikiki Beach will now be Waikiki Lagoon, and the list goes on. And that's,
have you been to the Netherlands? the sea's been rising there, and they've been gaining land.
I'm out of time.
I think it's interesting that you threw me under the bus, and I'm agreeing with it more than you are. You're the one who's all upset.
And I like this guy. That's the funny thing. So explain any of this to me. John Tierney, as you go, anything you're writing now or have recently published that we'd like to look up?
I've got a book coming out at the end of the year called "The Power of Bad," and it's very germane to what we said. In that we tend to overreact and we're over pessimistic about the world. The things are actually getting much better, even though we don't realize it.
Well, when the book comes out, I'll be sure to not invite you on my show. Or maybe I will. Maybe I will, John. Thank you for your time and intelligence again.
Thank you,
we appreciate
John.
It. Bye now.
Thank you, John. Bye bye.